Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Could one of you just take this, please? Thank you. Of Brahma Samhita, according to our overview book, there is going to be a change of subject from the description of Gokula and the abode of the Lord, the yantra, the mantra. So now we're going to go into the discussion about the process of creation from Mahavishnu. It is, I would say, somewhat easier to digest than the first section, which generally people don't find easy. Although having said that, it is quite deep, certainly quite deep. So let us see how we go, but I think really we'll find it quite a bit easier than the previous section to do with the yantra particularly. Okay, so let us... Actually, the part that we're going to read is, in fact, if you look in your overview books, we haven't really been referring to the overview book very much, but this section, section B, runs from text 7 to text 21. We've entitled it The Material Creation, and the first part of it is verse 7 to verse 10, actually. Yesterday we said to read verses 7, 8, and 9, but well, we'll see how time allows things today. But perhaps we'll try and get through from verse 7 to verse 10. Let us read... let us start by reading verse 7, the Sanskrit from Brahma Samhita. Mayaya Ramamanasya Navi Yogas Tayasaha Atmana Ramaya Reme Tyakta Kalam Sisrikshaya. Translation: Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. Is that okay? It's a little difficult to follow, but it's actually not that hard when you really think about it. We were reading yesterday how Krishna has one spiritual potency. That is his internal energy, spiritual energy, yoga maya energy, which works by arranging all the pastimes in the spiritual world. And for the neophyte devotees, or those devotees who are not perfect at least, then it gives protection, gives shelter. Mahatma nas tumam parta, daivim prakritim ashrita. The great souls, the devotees, are under the protection of the divine energy. That's that internal spiritual potency, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. However, that same energy is pervertedly manifest in the material world. In the spiritual world, it's yoga maya. In the material world, it's maha maya. Maya means illusion, and maha means great. It's the place of that great illusion where people, what to speak of not understanding their relationship with Krishna. They don't even understand themselves. They're simply lost in the material world. Just completely covered over by that perverted external energy. Durga covers the eyes of the conditioned souls, but then by her grace in her original form, then when the conditioned souls try to become devotees, then she uncovers their eyes. She covered them. She can also uncover them. So that we talked about a little bit at the end yesterday. And here, Lord Brahma is saying that Krishna doesn't really have anything to do with the material nature. He's there in the spiritual world, enjoying his pastimes. So what does he have to do with the material energy, which is simply full of misery, everything is temporary, all the people, all the living entities within the material world, they generally don't want to know about Krishna, so why should Krishna bother? And he doesn't, usually. He just lets them carry on attempting to enjoy independently. However, Lord Brahma, having made that point, says in the verse that still there is a connection. This is part of Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva in Krishna consciousness. Everything is part of Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva from the beginning to the end. I guess everyone marked themselves present, standing that we're part and parcel of Krishna, but it's not all one. Right from that point of understanding that I'm spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, but I'm an individual spirit soul. From that point, right up to the top, understanding Srimati Radharani. She is part of Krishna, she is his internal pleasure potency, but she's an individual. So on all levels, from the beginning to the end, this principle of Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva applies. Oneness and difference. And here also, the external energy. Krishna doesn't really deal with it. He has no interest. But still he deals with it. And the way in which he deals with it is mentioned here in this verse, text 7, that when he wants to create, then the amorous pastime, what does this mean? This means his eternal conjugal relationship with Srimati Radharani, ultimately actually. But in this specific case, we're talking about Mahavishnu, who's an expansion of Krishna, and his consort in this regard is Rama. She is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. As Krishna expands in different forms, Srimati Radharani expands also in different forms, which are always appropriate, taking into consideration the particular form that Krishna has expanded into. So Mahavishnu is an expansion of Krishna, and the appropriate expansion of Srimati Radharani, she's known as Rama. And she is a form of the goddess of fortune specifically, but of course the goddess of fortune is simply an expanded form of Radharani. So when Mahavishnu wants to create, then that amorous pastime, his conjugal relationship with Rama, the verse says it's an auxiliary activity. Means it's like the basis or the prototype upon which his exchange with the external energy is based. Yes, and that of course is going to be explained how he glances at the external energy. That's in the next verse, actually. And that glance is not just a glance. When we glance here and there, then our glance is not a person. Our glance is just some sort of sensory function. But when Mahavishnu glances, that glance is a person. And that person is a, like the original or a fairly original form of Lord Shiva. So how it's all gonna, so this is all based, this relationship, this interacting with the material nature in the creative process through the agency of the glance, which is this form of Lord Shiva. This whole thing that goes on in that regard is based on the conjugal relationship which exists between Mahavishnu and Rama, or ultimately between Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani. So, it's explained more in text 8, but for the time being, regarding the description given here in text 7 and the purport of text 7, actually, perhaps I could just read one verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is talking about precisely this, but in a little more detail. And, yeah, a little more detail. So this is now Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 5, Verse 24. The translation is, "The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time, and thus he felt imperfect, without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested." So that is the description. Same situation, basically. Mahavishnu was the only seer, the only active person at the time. I mean, he, obviously this is not including within Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha, because they are on the other side of the Viraja River. Mahavishnu is reclining on what we sometimes call the causal ocean, but more specifically, perhaps, it's known as the Viraja River. And we already read a little bit about it. It separates the spiritual kingdom from the material kingdom. So, when this verse says he was the only seer, it does not mean including in the spiritual realm. It means from the Viraja River going down into the material realm. When we look at that part of the creation, then at this point, Mahavishnu was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present. The basic energy, the verse says, was present. The material energy was present, but it was not manifest. The universes were not there with the various species of life, planetary systems and all that. It was this material energy in the unmanifest form is called pradhan. Pradhan. And that means all the ingredients which make up all the material ingredients, not the living, not the jivas, but all the material ingredients which make up the material world, they're just all mixed up together. earth, water, fire, air, ether, the three modes of material nature, mind, intelligence, false ego, the senses, the sensory functions, all these basic elements, the building blocks of life within this material world, they were just mixed up together. And you couldn't see that here is some earth, whereas over here is some water. And over on that side is some fire. You couldn't see like that. This is, we sometimes say, something like what the scientists imagine to be the primordial soup. You know, when you make a soup, you may take a number of ingredients, a few different types of vegetables, some water, some spices, some salt, and you cook it up. And if you really cook it up, you know, they're different soups, but if you really, you know, just cook it and cook it and cook it and cook it and cook it, after a while you won't be able to recognize that there is some cauliflower, but here is a potato. You won't be able to see that. It'll all just become all mushed up together, basically. Yeah. So, the material energy, when it's in this unmanifest or pradhan state, it's like the raw state of material energy, everything is mixed up like that, and you cannot see what is what. You follow the idea? Yeah. So, he was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present. The material energy was there, but it was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested. This means Rama. She was there with Mahavishnu, of course, in his abode, which is in the Viraja River. So the internal potency was manifest, but the material energy was dormant and in a sort of non-specific state. And now this is really the crucial point when it comes to why the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though as the verse, the text number 7 says in Brahma Samhita, he never consorts with his illusory energy. So even though that may be there, but still he has some dealings. Now there's a very crucial reason why, and we should understand that, among other things, for the test. Let me read Srila Prabhupada's, what he says, what the Bhagavatam says is that he felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. This is the Bhagavatam verse. So he felt there was something lacking, because all the jivas, all the living entities were dormant. So he felt a lack. So let me just read the purport here by Srila Prabhupada. This is 3.5.24. 3.5.24. Srila Prabhupada says, the Lord is the supreme seer, because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. At that time the seer was there, but the external energy, over which the glance of the Lord is cast, was not present. I mean, it was present, but it wasn't manifest. He felt somewhat insufficient, like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife. This is a poetic simile. Yes. The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. And that is its main purpose. This is why. The Lord is so kind. that in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting, and thus the creation takes place. Although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping. Material energy was dormant. And the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity, just as a husband wants to awaken his wife from the sleeping state for enjoyment. It is the compassion of the Lord for the sleeping energy that he wants to see her awaken for enjoyment, like the other wives who are awake. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha lokas. So here in the purport, it's very clear. Just as Lord Brahma in the verse is invoking this conjugal image of how the material, the Lord's interacting with the material energy is related with his interacting with his eternal consort Rama, or Krishna with Radharani, like this. So Srila Prabhupada is invoking that same conjugal type of sort of image in this purport here, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Similar idea. So this, the Lord then, the verse says, he glances. And this glance, there is something within this glance which is really the first factor when it comes to waking up the wife or stimulating, invigorating that material energy. It's the first step, not the last. And in one sense, it's the first one. The verse says that in his glance, the time energy is cast. The time energy contacts that sleeping material nature. If we look in the purport, we see at the bottom of page 18, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that even when he casts his glance, there is no real contact. It's Shambhu who makes the contact that we'll talk about shortly. So it's like, again, a chinchya beda bait. There's contact, but there's no contact. It's direct, but it's indirect. So what happens actually is, even though there's not exactly contact between Mahavishnu himself in person and the external energy, the glance makes contact, and as a service to Mahavishnu, Rama, the goddess of fortune, arranges for different things to go down the glance, to be sent through the glance, and in that way to enter the material nature. And Rama has at least some sort of affiliation, some sort of relationship with that external material energy. On page 19, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that this deluding energy, the material energy, is the maidservant of Rama. So they have a connection. It's like Prabhupada said in that purport we read, the material energy is like a co-wife who's sleeping. Actually, of course, we in ISKCON don't have so much experience with co-wives. In fact, in the past, I've known two devotees who each had two wives. They tried it. Didn't work, unfortunately. But in this case, the Maya Devi is taken to be the co-wife, but she is like a secondary co-wife. Yeah. So she is a maidservant of the main wife, who is Rama. Rama is, you know, the chief wife. And Maya is also a wife, but in a very secondary type of position, like a maidservant. So Maya serves Rama. Rama is serving Mahavishnu. He wants the material energy to be activated, so all the fallen souls can get another chance to go back to Godhead. At this point, in between the previous destruction and this creation which is just about to happen now, in between, when material energy is inert, then the living entities, all the jivas, are within Mahavishnu. They're in a state called Susupti. Susupti means deep sleep. And why are they in a state of deep sleep? I mean, how could you sleep that long? That's a long time. They're in a state of deep sleep because their karma has stopped. They're not receiving any karmic reactions. Not that all their karmic reactions are lost. They're there. But they're inert. Because people are receiving karmic reactions, then they're stimulated from one activity to another. But when their karma stops, they go into the state of susupti. How come their karma stopped? Because time stopped. Time is driving everything in this material world. You get one karmic reaction and you experience it, then it's finished. Then under the influence of time, your next karmic reaction comes. So in this way, the living entity is swept from one situation to another by the force of time, which is invigorating the stock of karma and letting you get one bit of karma after another. However, when the creation is wound up, time stops. And time also goes into Mahavishnu and remains in a latent state there. And therefore, we go in there like in a cocoon of our karma. But our karma has stopped. So therefore, we go into this state of susupti. I hope that makes sense. That's a little bit of background information. So, because Rama understands the desire of Mahavishnu, he wants those living entities to again come out, go into the material world, get a chance to go back to Godhead. Of course, they're prone also to misuse the chance and just get further lost in material life. But actually, the main idea behind the material creation is Mahavishnu wants the living entities to get the opportunity to go back to Godhead, which they can't do when they're in that state of susupti, deep sleep within him. So, understanding his desire, Rama, when he glances, Rama arranges that the various things required to get the material creation going again and to get the living entities going again in the material creation, she arranges that they're sent through the glance. And Maya Devi, the co-wife, but the secondary co-wife, who is like a maidservant of Rama, she understands this and helps. You follow the idea? So, just at the end of the purport, we're going to draw a diagram of all this shortly, actually. And I think it'll help to make it all clearer. But we could just note that at the end of this purport, page 19, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that Rama sends the time energy, was said, which represents the force of activity, two things. The force of activity and the force of instrumentality of Rama. The force of activity means the karma. And the force of instrumentality means the desire of the Lord, which is adopted by Rama as her desire, seeing she's a servant of the Lord. The Lord's desire is her desire. So the force of the karma of the living entities and the force of the desire of the Lord that they again become active and get this opportunity to go back to Godhead. They are like the functions, or they are, it says, they represent the time energy, or the time energy represents them. The time energy has those capacities. And then shortly, the living entities come. Okay, let's go on to text 8. Oh, let's just chant the Sanskrit first. Niyati sarama devi. Tat priya tad vasham tada. Tal lingam bhagavan shambhur. Jyoti rupa sanatana. Yayoni sapara shakti. Kamo bijam mahadare. Translation. The secondary process of association with Maya is described. Rama Devi, the spiritual chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all living entities. She is the mother of devotion. She is watching over all the jivas. She's concerned. Yeah. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. That's Mahavishnu. At creation, when all this is about to happen, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. What I take that to mean is that his glance, you know, it's something like when you have a torch at night. You know what I mean? I mean, when we glance, you cannot see that some energy is being transmitted. But if you turn on a torch at night, you can see there's a physical beam of light, actually, which is being projected through space. So perhaps it's something like that. There appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. It is of the nature of Mahavishnu. Subjective portion means Mahavishnu. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. It's a perverted reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion of divinity who functions as progenitor of the mundane world. That's Lord Shiva. He's the original progenitor, because he is that glance through which the living entities are injected into the womb of material nature, subject to the supreme regulatrix, as the previous verse and purport particularly mentioned. Rama is overseeing this. The conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix, the potencies coming from her. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara, means inferior potency, the symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So that may sound a little complex. You know, essentially, and in fact, the next verse 9 and verse 10 make it really vividly obvious. What we are reading about here is actually the original, and in fact it is the prototype, material, reproductive act. Actually. Yeah. That is precisely what it is. Let us try to illustrate it on the board. Yeah, let us do that. So, I'm going to stand up now. By Rama's, it's Shambhu is like a halo, or like a beam of light, something like that. By Rama's arrangement, time, or actually you could say the Kala Shakti, the potency of time, is projected into Maya. And that Kala Shakti actually embodies two specific functions, or it has two specific potencies implicit within it. One is, what did we say? The force of activity. Karma. The karma of the living entities. The force of their activities. Plus, the will of the Lord, which is sometimes called Ichcha Shakti. We don't want to complicate things with too many terms, but anyway. Huh? Ichcha means desire. The will of the Lord. Yes. And actually, they're really only going to sort of come into the picture in a few verses' time, but let's just put them in the diagram for now. The living entities, too. There go the living entities. They're on their way also. How's that? All these things are being, projected through the glance. The glance, in other words, is a medium. And by the, on the basis of Rama's potency, these things are being injected into Maya. When the living entities enter Maya, along with the time potency, then because the time potency includes their karma and the desire of the Lord, so the time potency awakens their karma and, you know, starts this whole process, which is the will of the Lord, that they again become active and get the opportunity to go back to Godhead. As long as they don't fall down into material life, which many of them do. But anyway, the main idea is to give them the opportunity to go back to Godhead. So in this regard, just to understand the different roles of the four different persons, we have four people here. We have Mahavishnu, we have Rama, we have Shambhu, and we have Mayadevi. Just to understand their specific roles, we could say that
Mahavishnu
If we use the example of an electrical powerhouse, it's fairly sort of applicable under the circumstances. So what is Mahavishnu's part in this whole thing? He is like the powerhouse.
Ma, she is like the electrical energy.
She is the actual potency, and she's dealing with the potencies. Then Shambhu, the wire, you could say, that the electricity is running through. And Maya is like the electrified object. There. In the translation of text 8, right at the very end, the last sentence, Lord Brahma says that the intercourse of Shambhu and Maya, here we have husband and wife, literally, they're actually husband and wife. So, the intercourse of this original husband and wife brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition. What does that mean? Means that the first thing that happens, is that the Mahatattva, the Pradhan, starts transforming into the Mahatattva. And the first part of that, the first thing to manifest is false ego. False ego. When the pradhan, we said it's something like a soup, a very mushy soup where everything has just been totally boiled into everything else. So in this original primordial soup, when time and the living entities, time with the karma and the will of the Lord embodied within it, when they all contact pradhan, then that cosmic soup starts to unravel. By unravel, I mean, if we use the example of the soup, it starts a process of going backwards from being like a total soup of coming to a point where all the original ingredients are there in their own original conditions. You follow what I mean? Yes. It's exactly like that. You turn around the process of making the soup. So at the end of that, there you get your potato and your cauliflower, and a little bit of salt is there, and the spices are here and there, in their own individual positions. Yeah. That is now Mahatattva. When the pradhan has been unraveled, and the different ingredients which are there, but which are all mushed together when it's pradhan, when they're all visible, there's the earth, there's the water, there's the fire, and, they're all there and there, specific positions. So the first part of that process is false ego comes. False ego is the first part of the unraveling of the material nature. And what is that false ego? He says, it's the reflection of the seed. What was the seed of this whole process? The procreative desire of the Lord. Yeah. The thing is that because Mahavishnu, through his manifestation as his glance, which is still part and parcel of him, but it's become a little separated from him, when that separated part of himself contacts Maya, because Maya is Maya and is the external inferior energy, then that projected form, at least not really projected form, but projected manifestation of his nature, Shambhu, contacts Maya, then it's like when milk contacts a souring agent. The milk becomes yogurt. So you cannot really say that Shambhu is something different altogether from Mahavishnu. Shambhu is Mahavishnu's glance. But at the same time, he's become separated. And he's very deeply in contact with Maya. So as a result, just like milk converts into yogurt when it's soured, so Shambhu is, in a sense, he's like at least a manifestation of, a type of manifestation of Mahavishnu. But his position has been changed in terms of the contact with Maya. And their contact, which is, as we said, the original prototype reproductive act, has its seed in the desire of the Lord to give the living entities the opportunity to go back to Godhead through this like activity which is based on his conjugal relationship with Rama. So that's enough to meditate on for today, I think. I hope it hasn't been too bewildering. Any comments or questions? Yeah. What about it? See, when Pradhan becomes Mahatattva, by the power of time, and which includes the living entity's karma, then, you know, that activates matter. Matter becomes activated by that glance of the Lord, which includes that time factor, that powerful moving factor, which activates everything. So time activates the pradhan and starts it's like a standard procedure of the pradhan unraveling. It's just like, you know, the opposite idea when you cook a soup. Soon as you apply fire, then all the ingredients automatically go into this process of breaking down, and eventually they come to the point of merging with each other altogether. Right? That is implicit in applying fire to a soup. So when time is applied to the material nature, it starts a procedure of the unraveling of the ingredients, separating the ingredients from each other. Yeah. Separating the ingredients from each other. And as the ingredients start to separate from each other, the first ingredient which becomes apparent, which manifests, is false ego. Yeah. Perverted cognition, otherwise known as false ego. Mainly the question is, does Shambhu develop false ego, or does the jiva? It's mainly the jiva But Shambhu gets a little bit. That's why he's considered to be yogurt and not milk. Because there is actually a change. Yeah, there is actually a change. Therefore he's known as Shiva Tattva. He's not Vishnu Tattva, exactly. He's certainly not Jiva Tattva either. He's in his own category. So there has been a change. Yeah. But, you know, the Jivas, oh, they are just completely overcome by it. But he is also in that position, you know, there are elements of it there. Is there a difference between the causal ocean and Viraja River? No. They are actually two names for the same thing. That river or body of water which divides the material realm from the spiritual realm, and in which, on which, lies Mahavishnu. Yeah. Yeah. Question is that, or comment that, is Pradhan, what is the position of Pradhan? And there's a suggestion that it may actually be spiritual or in between, something like that, material and spiritual. But it's already been stated that it's apara. It's apara. It's that inferior nature. So Pradhan basically, you know, in one sense, everything is spiritual. But the Pradhan is, as we said, it's the raw ingredients of the material nature. It's all there. All the ingredients are there. The earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all the various things, they're all there. But they're not manifest in their own positions yet. They're just mixed up. That's why we gave the example of the cosmic soup. But when they're activated by the glance of the Lord, then they start separating. So then, you know, the earth, well, first of all, the false ego comes out, and you could say something like a whole lump of false ego. I mean, I'm being a little figurative about it. Suddenly you get all the false ego. And then you get the three modes. And then you get, well, there's a whole procedure. The false ego, then the three modes interact with the false ego. Mind is produced of the interaction of false ego with sattva-gun. Then the senses are produced of the interaction of false ego and raja-gun. So in this way, all the different things, which all the different parts of the material creation become manifest in a raw form. Then later the universes, a little later, the universes are injected in also. And then all these ingredients are like divided up and put into the universes. And then the universes expand. This we'll be reading about shortly. But the basic point, you know, the thing is, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 14, Krishna says, Daivi Yesha Gunamai, that this divine energy of mine consisting of the three modes. And if I remember correctly, Srila Prabhupada addresses this point in the purport there. He says that the material energy is divine, because it's one of Krishna's energies. Yeah. So in an ultimate sense, it's certainly divine. But still it's the material energy. Still it's the material energy. You know, that divine energy, it's a transformation of the original, that spiritual energy. So when the living entities become devotees, and then they use things like this microphone in Krishna's service, then this microphone can be considered spiritual. Yeah. So in that sense, I mean, in the sense that it's coming from Krishna and therefore it's divine in that ultimate sense, in the sense of if we dovetail it in Krishna's service, it can be considered divine. So in that sense, the pradhan could be considered divine. The material nature could be considered divine. But actually the pradhan, as it is, that all the ingredients of material nature. Of course, when the living entities come in, because they're in Maya, they're in material consciousness, so then, most of them misuse it. Yeah. Some of them will take the opportunity to go back to Godhead. Most of them will misuse it. So in that sense, it's like in a strictly material state. But it doesn't mean that it's not, that like the pradhan, before the living entities went into it and started misusing it, it doesn't mean that the pradhan is not earth, water, fire, air, and ether. It's definitely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. All those things are there. Yeah. So I think that's really the way to understand the pradhan. Srila Prabhupada ki.